Hi there, everybody. I'm Lucas Martell, creator of Walkabout, and we are here today with Karen Prell, the voice and actor behind Red Fraggle, celebrating, as you could probably imagine, the launch of our Fraggle Rock avatar. So, Karen, I'm actually going to hand it over to you to sort of like let everyone know more about yourself, and we'll be really, really judgmental about your golfing skills. That's really what this is all about. So.
Hi, yeah, this is Karen Prell. I'm having fun checking out the new Fraggle Rock avatars here. Really, really fun. And checking out this labyrinth game. It's a bit over 40 years since the original Fraggle Rock first aired. So having these avatars out for people to play being Fraggles is a fun tie-in to that. And of course, we've got our new Fraggle Rock Back to the Rock series that's out now on Apple TV+. So very exciting time to be a Fraggle. And thank you guys so much for giving me a chance to be a Fraggle today.
Yeah. Actually, that was one of the first questions that I wanted to ask you, sort of like just talking about some of like the all the puppeteering stuff. Like how this is obviously different because you actually get to sort of be the avatar a little bit. Do you find that sort of like have you played around with any of that stuff? I know that they're doing there's been a lot of advances in puppeteering over the years with using more digital input stuff and sort of like is the new Fraggle Rock series, is that all still using the classic the same classic puppets and everything though?
It uses hand puppets for the Fraggles. For the Doozers and the Gorgs, they have animatronic elements for the faces of the Gorgs, and for the and for the Doozers. Mm-hmm. So pretty much as it was done in the original series, but for the new series, all the electronics and animatronics are updated and even more expressive. Yeah. But basically, it's, you know, the concept is as we did it 40 years ago.
Yeah, I love how it feels very much like the original. And I grew up on the original Fraggle Rock. So it going back to that for the new series just felt like a really, really felt like going home a little bit. So well, go ahead and take your shot, and we'll sort of explore the labyrinth. I love the fact that we get to sort of mash up a couple of classic Henson properties now. So,
okay, man, this is one where I just close my eyes and hit the ball and see what happens.
That might actually work out pretty well for you there.
It's getting there. It's getting there.
Fantastic.
Okay.
So I'd also love to find out a little bit about this. Like, what was the process? Like, how did you get into animation and puppeteering? Because I know you've also done some digital animation and stuff as well, but obviously puppeteering seems to be your first love. Is that safe to say?
Well, it was certainly the first thing I tried to do on my own, and my first career was with puppeteering. So I watched I can't accidentally hit your ball, can I? I'm okay.
Oh, no, it'll just go right over it.
Yep. Okay.
Nope. I think they're going to count that. Yeah, we're mean like that. We're very sticklers for the rules.
Oh, well. Hey! Okay.
Ooh, very nice.
There we go.
But so you said your first job in the industry was with the Henson Company, right?
Yes, working on Sesame Street, and I had been very nice. I had been doing puppet shows in the Seattle area and doing puppet shows for school projects. And so I sent a videotape to the Jim Henson Company back when they were needing, this was like 1979, so back, yeah! Oh, it's kind of there. back when they were needing to find more women puppeteers.
Okay.
And so they were excited to give me a try and brought me out. And I actually auditioned with Jim Henson.
And, how was that process? Was that super easy, or was it, a little intimidating?
It was just very, very casual. This all happened in December of 1979. They brought me out to New York, and everybody, this is going to take a while. Everybody at the Henson Company was on, holiday break. So it was just Jim and a few people at the office there. So I met him in one of their rehearsal rooms, and I brought some of my own puppets that I made. And he brought some Sesame Street puppets, like Clementine the Cowgirl. And so just had me talk with the puppets and say the alphabet. That's one of the big tests when they check is to see what you do when you get to the letter W. How many mouth flaps?
Oh, okay. And is the secret to do less or more?
Well, it's just to match the syllables. W has three syllables, so to see, do you do three mouth movements for W? And he was just wanting to, kind of have an idea of my skills, and then they decided, to give me a chance working on Sesame Street.
Cool. Do you remember what was the first character that you were on screen with?
The first character they had me do it was very unusual. They had me doing a main character right away, and usually they start someone out assisting or doing background characters, but they put me into a main character, so it was exciting and but very, very overwhelming, because I had not been out of my parents' basement. I was 20, did not know much of the world. Well, it went somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that works.
Well enough to know. So straight from my parents' basement to downtown Manhattan. And,
there we go.
Oh, very nice. You've played this game before. Mm-hmm.
How was the culture shock from that? Did you say you're originally from, like, the Seattle area, was it? Or?
Yeah. So okay. Just, it was quite... quiet. We literally lived on a little farm, farm to Manhattan. It's definitely culture shock, and then also just getting used to the processes of puppeteering, using monitors. I had not used monitors before. Okay, so another one's gonna take a while, and even the fact that they would cut to different cameras, and no, you don't look into every camera when they cut to that camera, all these basics. So it was a lot. I gave it my best. The Dina character didn't work out, but spending a few years living in Manhattan and adulting kind of prepared me for the next thing they asked me to try, which was auditioning for Red Fraggle, so that worked out.
That's so many classic moments. I could just sort of like geek out about all of that old stuff, but I know that I'd also love to find out a little bit from you, just sort of like a bit more jumping ahead, sort of like the current state of the industry, because I know that it seems to me that there's actually been a bit of a resurgence with puppeteering. Like, I'd imagine that back at the time, was Henson pretty much the only place that was doing the larger stuff, or were there, I suppose that there were a few other things on visual effects shows, but most of that seemed like it was running through the Henson Creature Department, wasn't it?
Well, there was, the 80s, there was just a big time for creatures, like practical creatures and makeup and effects in the movies. Mm-hmm. Like really, really amazing. So many incredible artists working in the industry. And when you visited a set, the actual, you know, the creatures the sets were actually there. They weren't able to just replace as much as they can now. Mm-hmm. So it was really, really magical. Speaking of which, I'm really impressed by Humongous because that's pretty much the size it was when we were on the set. And again, Humongous was practical and that size.
Yeah.
And the armor was like some lightweight material. It was sprayed to look metallic. Mm-hmm. And had this huge, huge framework inside. It was just massive. And he was really swinging that axe. So that was like, you know, stay away from the axe when it's swinging. So this is fantastic. It truly is. It really feels like the scale of being next to it.
I'm trying to remember the shots from the actual Labyrinth movie, because it's sort of like we've spent enough time in here that things have gotten muddy, and we now know our version almost even better. So I'm trying to remember, like, if was it all done with sort of like large levers then? Like people actually manually moving that, or was it all like,
Humongous pneumatic? Was not puppeteered by puppets. It was like this huge, huge hydraulic, like the special effects guys that are used to, like, you know, hauling vehicles for car crashes or gimbals for spaceships. They had to build that because it was so huge.
So I mean, big,
obviously, you know, the creature shop also worked with them, but like the framework and the operation of it was like the heavy duty effects people just to get that size of machinery working.
Yeah.
It was just really so impressive. So now the industry now, of course, it would just be CG.
Right, especially for a lot of the movie stuff, or like like Yoda now, they're doing mostly CG.
Or like if there's, say you're doing a show with dragons, and there might be like a large green painted head that you would you would look at, and then it would be replaced by CG. So there would be something indicating the position and the size, but you know, it would all be CG, and it wouldn't have all the mechanisms on set. So it was definitely a magical time to see this kind of stuff for real. Okay, let me see if I can get this.
It also seems like there's been a little bit of a.
It's coming right back to where I started.
Yeah. It also seems though, like there's been a little bit of a resurgence of just like, I mean, I know that there's some adult puppeteering, but like with Fraggle Rock coming back, Sesame Street's on, it seems like there's also been a couple of other shows. I also know that Henson's really been leading the way with some of the digital puppeteering, like Sid the Science Kid. And yeah, it just seems to me like that maybe those two, the VFX, the CG, and the puppeteering are kind of starting to merge a little bit, or is that just sort of, is Henson the only one right now really working on that sort of stuff?
Well, there's all kinds of things going on, but the thing that I've become aware of is, especially, this is so tricky, I'm trying to get this.
There you go.
When there are live actors with the puppets, they love having the actual puppet there. And it just makes a difference to the performance. Like Lily Cooper, who plays Doc in the new Fraggle Rock, she interacts with Sprocket, and they just have so much fun just riffing off of each other, and it just makes just such a big difference to actually have the character there and get that spontaneous performance happening together, and it's just so much more fun for the performers.
Yeah, I have to say, because I was doing VFX for quite a while. I haven't done it for several years, but I remember the first, I think would have been like Sin City and Sharkboy and Lava Girl were like the first two that I had started on, and that was entirely green screen, absolutely nothing practical. But it does seem like lately there's been a big, big push to kind of get away from that and get more that the actors can respond to. And especially some of the virtual production just seems like it would be an app, like a really fantastic way of doing some stuff. In fact, are you guys using any of the virtual production stuff at all for like Fraggle Rock?
There are some virtual enhancements in post for some of the effects and, and like removing the arm wires of the puppets. But we just try to keep it close to the processes that we used on the original.
Totally building everything.
Otherwise, it would just be different. It would be a different production if it was done differently.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, to just sort of hold on to the original. I guess I was just thinking. So just to sort of, in case we're using a few too many buzzwords, virtual production is what we're talking about, where they're using the stage with the screens that match the cameras behind them, so that you're able have like CG backgrounds, but it's still happening live and captured in camera, which is
no, we use blue screen on the original and the new Fraggle Rock, and it's still blue screen instead of green screen because the original there was only blue screen technology, so the characters' colors were designed to work on with blue screen.
Right.
So so we continue using blue, and so there's a lot of blue screen work. We're not as confined as we were originally to keep shadows or like, you know, people's bare hands or faces from floating around the characters. Those can be more easily removed, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing because it was so hard in the original show. Did that go anywhere? Obviously not. It came back.
I think it bounced out.
It popped back here. So,
there we go. Yeah, well, so if anyone's curious, that's why you'll never see a blue Fraggle, unless I'm mistaken.
Well, now we do have, in the new Fraggle series, we have a character I perform called Icy Joe, who is this, like a prehistoric Fraggle that had been frozen in the ice for hundreds of years, and she is bluish, so sometimes if we shoot against blue, we have to kind of tune things to get her image. I don't know if we have ever at times, actually, we do have a green option for certain things. So we might have,
you could change it for
some of her things. We might have done a green screen just so we could pick her up better.
Totally. I'll still get down there.
There we go.
Well, yeah.
Again, I'm loving these sets. This is like, again, the Goblin Village was this size and this cramped, and with the steep little walkways, this is just so amazing to see. And the house that shook when Ludo was walking up inside of it and lifted the roof, again, practical. The house shook. The roof came off.
Yeah.
Practically, it happened for real.
I will say that I remember that when we were doing this set, it was so, I think that it helped tremendously to have the fact that there were actual people that were on set, because I think we even looked up at a certain point to find out like how tall was Jennifer Connelly when she had shot Labyrinth, because we were trying to use her for scale references, really weird search history, I'm sure, that has come up with stuff like that. Trying to figure out exactly sort of like, use that as a reference to try to get the scale right. But I remember the Goblin Village being something that was like, this was, I think at the time, one of the most elaborate sort of like settings that we had ever done for like a single hole or two like this. The amount of artwork that they did and spent, there was just so much great reference, and especially looking at all the behind the scenes photos, and again, having photos of puppeteers and of Jim actually sort of like around to just sort of like kind of get a sense of what it actually felt like in the scale and just how it was actually built really helped tremendously. To be honest, I think that's actually one of the reasons that I kind of fell out of love with visual effects was just that move more to the digital and less of the practical on-set stuff, because I always liked the, you know, even if it was the still stuff doing digital, I always loved getting things more, yeah, more practical and more in camera and trying to create that environment that the actors have something to actually play off of and react to. It really does.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to explain to folks who aren't acting how difficult it is to just, yeah, to act to nothing or to act to a green screen without getting anything back in return.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this was, yeah, Jennifer got to experience the Goblin Village exactly like this, walking around and chickens mm-hmm. and the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm also kind of curious to hear. Oh, that's a nice shot.
Come on. Okay, getting closer.
Very close, yeah. But I'm also kind of, curious to find out what it was like sort of going back, because you said it had been, when was Fraggle Rock? It was early to mid 80s, right? So it's been almost what?
We started shooting it in Toronto in 1982.
Okay.
And then it first aired on HBO in the States and CBC and in a ton of other mm-hmm. countries in 1983.
Okay. Yeah.
And then it ran. We shot four seasons. It was kind of, at least in the States, it was kind of split up into kind of five seasons. But when we were shooting, it was tight in blocks of four seasons. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. But yeah, so what was it like sort of like now that the new season or now that the new series on Apple on Apple TV, now that that has come out, like what was it like sort of like going back almost 40 years after and sort of like, yeah, re-inhabiting Red Fraggle? Was it just sort of like going back home or what was sort of different about it this time around?
Well, there was old and new and having the characters be very similar, but mm-hmm. with mostly new performers, but the new performers mm-hmm. just embodied the spirit of the original characters and the original performers so well. Mm-hmm. So that was really exciting to see the new generation and how all of our hard work inspired them.
Yeah.
And to see a new generation of not only performers, but artists and people on the crew just putting their heart and soul into the new series, just the mm-hmm. same way they did on the original series. And that was inspiring to me to come back and perform Red in such a vibrant and exciting and appreciative atmosphere. So we just mm-hmm. all came together and worked very, very hard and had a lot of fun and just became a new big mm-hmm. Fraggle family.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I'm curious, were there any, because you were one of the originals to come back, were there any of the other original performers that made it back for the new series?
So in the new series, the one original performer who is on set performing the puppet and the voice for my character from the original series, mm-hmm. Dave Golds is providing the voice for Boober, who on set is performed by Frank Meshkalite, and also providing the voice for Uncle Traveling Matt, whose puppet is performed sometimes by Frank Meshkalite and sometimes by Kevin Clash for a lot of the remote Uncle Matt pieces are shooting in all different places and countries. And otherwise, it's all new people. Now, Frank, he was in the body performer for Junior.
This is a tough one. This is a brutal one.
For Junior Gorg in the original, for like the last season, he was in the Junior Gorg costume. So he is now back puppeteering, and he is providing the animatronic face and the voice for Paul Gorg in the new series.
Okay. And I'm also kind of curious, because I'm sure that there's a few people who might be watching this that are just kind of curious about sort of like getting into something like puppeteering. And you mentioned that there's so many new performers. I'm just kind of curious, someone who is wanting to learn how to do that or take that up, like where do a lot of people start, or what are some good resources for people who are wanting to learn to do what you do?
Oh, nice. These days, people do videos online. First of all, it's a good resource for puppet performing and building to see other people's videos. And then it's just so easy for people to do their own videos. If they have an idea for a character and build their own puppet, then they can just do a series online and get known that way and really get the experience. Because it's just like me when I first tried doing Dina. It doesn't work immediately. And the good thing is just to keep learning and trying, getting in your thousands of hours of practice before you get to Carnegie Hall, that kind of thing. So doing the puppet videos, you definitely get to be. You get exposure to a greater audience. It is really fun to do live puppet shows in schools or libraries or community events. So that's always, people always love that. Just the thing that didn't exist in the day when I was doing puppets was the option to easily shoot on video and be online.
I was right on the edge of that, and just sort of like just remembering the difficulty in that. For me, it was more like the late 80s when I started getting interested in film and a bunch of that stuff. And it was just so difficult to even find resources for how to do stuff. And even at that point, like, I think my grandpa had one of the first VHSC camcorders, but he was reluctant to let us use it because it was a pretty expensive toy for the time. So, how difficult everything was.
It was, and in fact, there really wasn't VHS when I sent in my audition tape.
Right.
To Henson's, I went to my community college, and they had like a 1-inch black and white U-matic videotape machine that was like the size of a washing machine. So you roll that thing out, camera on a separate stand, shoot something in black and white, and then the tape would be, I don't know, the size of a phone book. and that's what I sent to the Henson Company for my audition tape. So there wasn't any VHS. There certainly wasn't any shooting it on your phone. Mm-hmm. So there's just so many good options today. Even if you want to do live shows, being able to rehearse on your phone, to get used to using a monitor, which would have been so helpful when I was starting out, just to be able to easily rehearse. Because you can rehearse in the mirror, but when you're using a video monitor, it shows not a reversed image, like a real image of what the audience is seeing. So your brain has to get used to working what feels like backwards, even though you're...
You have to kind of invert it yourself.
Yeah. But there are options in some apps on phones where you can mirror or not mirror the image, so you can get your monitor practice that way quite easily.
Oh, hey there. I forgot about that. I actually wasn't trying to do that, but that's a whole nunchuck.
Oh, nice.
I don't think that I've ever actually hit that before, so it's good to know that it's at least possible. And it's on camera, which is what really matters. So you've talked a good bit too. You've mentioned a couple times building puppets. Do you still build your own puppets at all? Or there's dedicated people?
That was, for the original and the new Fraggle Productions. We've got, dedicated team of amazing puppet builders, and I'm so lucky. The original builder for the original Red Fraggle, Raleigh Crewson, also built the version of Red we're using now on Fraggle Rock, Back to the Rock. So, and Red is like, I tell people that performing puppets is like performing a musical instrument, and Red is a Stradivarius.
Okay. Just,
it's a beautiful design by Michael Frith, and beautiful puppet building by Raleigh, and so just very flexible and expressive, and all I have to do is just kind of think of what I want to do, and it happens. You know, I don't have to, you know, walk through any technical steps to achieve what I want. It's just there. It's just so responsive.
Yeah, so it's really one to one in terms of the controls that you're able to, push into the performance. Basically, you don't have to. You're not operating anything with animatronics. You're not having to do anything sort of, like you mentioned, technical sort of behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So, and I'd imagine you probably work with the puppet builders and make modifications and stuff based off what you're needing, I'd imagine.
Oh, yes. And suggestions, you know, when a puppet is being developed, we'll try it out and see, you know, what the weight is and that it's flexible in all the right places. And, like, oh, could you adjust the hinge of the mouth this way so I could do this? And just you know, various fine tuning bits and pieces like that. And I do like performing animatronic enhancements, like on the worm in Labyrinth. I like performing the eyes for the worm, and on the new Fraggle Rock, I performed the blinking eyes for Icy Joe. And I have fun with that. But for Red, she doesn't need that. She works as she is. If she needs to be asleep, we have separate eyelids that we just put over her eyes.
Yeah. It was funny. One of the things that we talked about as we were doing the avatars was most of our characters have blinks. And we had to sort of say, like, no, we can't do blinks with the Fraggles. Yeah. That wouldn't, like, yeah, just because it's so much more accurate to not put them in there. So, it was actually weird that we had to sort of simplify our avatars for them a little bit.
Yeah, and Moki on the original and the new series, her eyelids could close. They weren't necessarily used. They were used more for emotions and expressions, not for just regular blinking.
Yeah.
Donnie Kimball, the performer for Moki in the new Fraggle series, she's amazing. Mm-hmm. Of course, Kathy Mullen was just so, did such a beautiful, deep performance with Moki in the original series. And and then Donna just kind of takes it into a new arena and just does amazing things with her acting and using the eyes for expression. I'm so impressed with what everybody's doing.
Yeah.
And Jordan Lockhart, who's the performer for Wembley on the new series. Mm-hmm. Again, amazing, fun performer. And Wembley has, I don't know if you remember, he's got like twirly eyes, like a twirly eye mech. And so Jordan's really wonderful at just kind of playing with those, not for just a chaotic spinning effect, but using them for like little, for the eyes looking around, which is just really exciting to see.
I think that is one of the things that's so interesting about puppeteering, even more so than a lot of other types of animation, is just sort of like you do kind of have to really get to know that very specific character and how you're going to use some of the unique aspects of it. So are there any of the other elements that you find that, especially with like Red Fraggle? Or maybe a better question would be like, is Red your favorite one? Or do you have another favorite character that you've loved performing in particular?
Oh, Red is absolutely my favorite. That was just kind of a big thing for me, just even developing as a person. So, you know, out in the real world, out of my parents' basement, adulting in the real world, and usually being, you know, a very shy and still a very shy, quiet, introverted person, and having a character where I could just act up and scream and yell and run around and explore that part of me. And I was so shocked when Jim Henson cast me as Red Fraggle. Mm-hmm. I thought for sure I was more of a Moki person, but he wanted me to be mm-hmm. Red, and it's like he could see my inner Red before I could. Mm-hmm. and it worked out. It's just been so fun, finding that character in me.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, I have fun with Icy Joe because she's just so big and weird and loud. Mm-hmm. And she kind of has some Fraggly kind of, Red Fraggly kind of passion, but it's just in kind of a bigger, rougher form.
Yeah. It's funny. I could actually see because one of the things is that when characters are playing against, or when actors are playing against type, it can be so much. It can be so. Oh, by the way, there's a trick to this one. If you just
Okay. Oh, that's right. That's yeah. Yes. Yeah.
We didn't even get a chance to comment on yes, the gravity maze, as we call it. So.
Yeah, and then I seen the baby over there. I was performing the baby. When the baby puppet is like sitting upside down in like the doorways, that's me.
Oh yeah.
Up inside the set, or like looking over the edge of the stairs, that's me with a scary rubber baby puppet.
I didn't actually know that they used a puppet for that. So
yeah,
or that they had a puppet, Toby.
They couldn't. There weren't really good options for putting in a CG baby. So So that was me with the puppet, reaching over the end of the stairs or inside the set, reaching down for the upside down baby, just doing just a tiny little bit of stuff to have it move.
That's interesting. I had always assumed that it was just the same baby, that they had just turned the camera 90 degrees or 180 degrees in order to sort of simulate the different look. But I had no idea that there was a puppet.
They definitely did that for some. Shots as much as they could back in 1985, but for other shots where it was wide or they needed certain the camera,
you didn't need that detail,
things,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was handy to have the physical baby there. So it was just a couple shots and had the puppet, and then the rest was very fancy shooting. But again, they built an Escher maze. Of course, it wasn't anti-gravity.
Yeah.
But it was huge, and just having cranes and wires all over the place to. I'm getting dizzy just standing here. Let's see if I can do this.
That'll do it. If we're coming up, so this is hole 17, we've got one more hole after this, but I'm remembering now, because we actually, when we first launched Labyrinth, you came on and we did a really large group that played. This one takes some getting used to, but yeah, I realized that we never actually made it this far. Did we maybe come and just look at the maze when we were
recording this last time? We skipped ahead to this.
Okay.
We skipped ahead to this one, mm-hmm. and then I think we finished up here.
Okay.
So I don't think we got beyond this. We just, because it was like, oh, you got to check out the Escher maze. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Well, yeah. It's a while, so I forgot all the hints needed for.
Oh yeah. Well, and we wouldn't have played it, but that's just a little plug for anyone who's watching this who wants to. See more of Karen. We're coming up to hole 18 here, but yeah, there is another video. I'm sure we could find a way to link it in the description. But yeah, that was from 2 years ago when we first launched Labyrinth. So yeah, it's super, super great to have another Henson thing that we get to geek out with you about.
Yeah.
So,
I
was just remembering, I wanted to ask you while we were back in the gravity maze there. One of the things that we picked up on that is just sort of like a theme. One of the few things that is not puppeteered in most cases is chickens. Was it just sort of like chickens were just like the go-to thing? It seemed like almost every scene had a chicken in it within Labyrinth,
They had chicken wranglers, and they just had some very calm, quiet chickens that We're just, you know, we're just happy wandering around. And there was one scene where during the magic dance sequence, I didn't even do anything. Nope. where there's a goblin that's holding a chicken on its lap, and I'm doing the live hands for that goblin. So I got to hold the chicken, you know, very gently and carefully, and just kind of have it dance a little bit, but, you know, be careful with the chicken.
Nope. I'm still going to keep going for Brooke here, I think. That one.
I'm also getting dizzy just standing here. This is so well done. I think the last time when we played this, I think I went away to shoot more of the new Fraggle series. So that's I just put away my VR stuff. So thank you for giving me a chance to get it going again.
An excuse to pull it back out. Absolutely. Well, I would be, so we've already announced it, so I think it's safe to say, because we're also doing we'll be releasing the Dark Crystal avatars coming up here before too long as well. So those aren't out yet.
I knew you were doing more, but I didn't know which ones. Oh, nice. That's exciting.
We haven't announced what we're doing, but we've been working on them. Just curious, were you involved with Dark Crystal at all?
No, not the movie or the series. I was in the I was in London when they were building Dark Crystal things in the creature shop there, and also in New York when they were building there, and so I got to visit and play with some of the puppets.
Cool. Yeah, because I mean, I suppose, at that time there would have been quite a bit. There was a lot of stuff that was going on at the Henson Company, especially during that time. I mean, there's still a ton of different productions going on, but yeah, there was a lot of it was almost sort of like that golden era Hollywood where all of you performers were sort of there and would sort of be on different productions. But yeah, there were probably several that you weren't able to be on just because there were so many different productions happening at any given time, I'd imagine.
Yeah, there was a lot going on. So I was I was back doing Sesame Street, and they had people spread all over the place working on all the projects. So yeah, it was a very very exciting time. But now is a very exciting time as well.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well yeah, Dark Crystal they did the new, was it Age of Resistance? It was on Netflix, and then Fraggle Rock. Anything else that you're wanting to plug or mention before we wrap up here?
Well, definitely just mention again, we've got a lot of things to celebrate Fraggle Rise. Over 40 years since the original Fraggle Rock was released, and we've got the new Fraggle Rock Back to the Rock on Apple TV Plus, new series with a lot of old and new characters and a new generation of amazing performers. So a lot of fun Fraggly things. And the original series can also be seen on Apple TV Plus. So there's a lot of Fraggling to be found.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for spending time. And I'll just mention that pick up the Fraggle Rock avatars. They are in the game by the time this airs. So you do have to get them in game. So go in and there'll be a link within that panel off to the right that shows you how to get there, or you can just click on avatars and you'll find them. But thank you so much, Karen, for taking some time and spending your day with us.
Thank you so much for celebrating all these wonderful Henson TV shows and movies, and I look forward to seeing what else you do in the future.
Okay, awesome. Thanks, everybody.